you and I both know the team MVP was Dwight Smith Jr., who had had a fairly disappointing 2012 season, but 2013 was very different for him.
Well, if you ask him, he was kind of hampered by an ankle injury all last year between Bluefield and Vancouver, and he never felt like he was 100%, and that disappointed him. So he kind of came into this year with a chip on his shoulder, and I'll never forget that first interview when he was first assigned to Lansing. He said, people are going to second-guess me, people are going to doubt me, and my goal is to go out there and prove them wrong. So he does play with that chip on his shoulder, and he showed it. He played in 109 games. He wanted to play over 100, so he achieved that goal. 284 average, that is pretty darn good in a pitcher's league like the Midwest League. 365 on base percentage. He set goals for himself at 10 home runs and 30 stolen bases. Now, he had 7 homers, which is not bad, but the extra base hits were there, 17 doubles, 3 triples. He's got the speed. And his stolen bases were good. He was 25 out of 30, so nothing to really scoff at. He finished strong as well, so I think that's a bonus for him as well. In the month of August, 331 with a 397 on base percentage. His entire second half was great, and I think maybe the most consistent bat from day one in his arrival to Lansing to the end of the season. I don't think there's any arguing that Dwight Smith Jr. really did a lot to help their lineup.
There's a player on the Lugnuts this year who maybe you did not expect so much out of him, and it gave you far more.
Well, I think you and I would probably agree on this one. It's Emilio Guerrero. I mean, he was solid in the first half, but he was a singles hitter. It was kind of an empty average. He only hit .254. The on-base percentage was pretty good, .347. That was in 40 games. But there was only 5 extra base hits out of 32 total hits. He had 4 doubles and 1 home run. And then all of a sudden in the second half, I have no idea what clicked for him. He came off the disabled list after getting that hit-by-pitch on the forearm, and he went on a tear. He hit .290 in the second half. On-base percentage was up, but the extra bases were way up. 11 doubles, 2 triples, 7 home runs. He had that 6-for-6 night against the West Michigan Whitecaps. That's one that you'll never forget. When he also drove in 5 runs, had a grand slam. His defense improved a lot, and that was a lot of what he was working on. I mean, a very hard worker. He and Mike Mordecai, the roving infield instructor, worked a ton. And it was really nice to see him get that promotion at the end of the season, and it was certainly well-deserved. Finished the year hitting .277, a .757 OPS, but he's driven 52 RBIs in 98 games. And not too bad for a shortstop who's 6'4", pretty lanky. And, you know, I'm looking forward to see where he ends up next year and how his numbers look.
I thought that Dalton Pompey was going to be a fine leadoff hitter for the team. I didn't think he was going to end up with the power that he ended up showcasing near the very end of the year, especially from July and throughout August.
I don't think he knows where that came from either. Every time we asked him about it, he would just start laughing and saying, hey, I'm finally being able to turn on some pitches. You know, the on-base percentage for him was there all year, like you said. He was a leadoff guy or batting first or second in the lineup all season long. And John Camargo Jr. even threw him in the 3 spot a few times. And that was before the power really came. He had 6 home runs. They were all after July 24th. And 4 of those home runs came in the last week of the season. He also had a pair of grand slams. And it was nice to see him really showing the power from both sides. We saw in the first half the extra bases from the left side. He loves driving the ball to the opposite field corner. So from the left side, he can get into left field. Then all of a sudden, he started turning on balls late in the year, and we know that he's got the power from the right side. His comparison for himself, someone that he wants to turn into, is Carlos Beltran. And you really started to see that at the end of the year. The defense was always there. The plate discipline was, for the most part, always there. But the strikeouts really came down in the second half. He was making more contact. The average was up. The walks were up. The strikeouts were down. And all of a sudden, the power started coming for him. And all of a sudden, this is a 20-year-old playing with a ton of confidence. And he's got the potential to be one heck of an outfielder.
Speaking with Slavko Bekovic, I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. We were the broadcasters for the Lansing Lugnuts this past season. You're listening to Around the Nest, Jaytalking our way through the Toronto Blue Jays organization and basically summing up this 2013 season. The starting rotation near the very start of the year, in fact, right from opening day, featured Alonzo Gonzalez and Roberto Osuna and Daniel Norris, Taylor Cole, and Javier Avendano. Nowhere in that top 5 is Ben White. He called himself, and jokingly, the heartbeat of the team when we first met him near the very start of the year. Ben White, though, is the backbone of the rotation and the pitching staff.
He was one of those big surprises that you just love to see because, one, he's a great guy. Two, he works hard. And three, he's kind of ignored. He throws 88 miles an hour. He's got a fastball, changeup, and a curveball. And he was a non-drafted free agent, played 4 years at Temple. All of a sudden, you know, he had okay numbers at Vancouver, maybe poor numbers for his standards. But then he comes in out of the bullpen, and he was just rock solid. If you ignore the last 3 starts of the year, where I really do feel like he was wearing down a lot, left a lot of balls up in the zone,
After August 14th, a win against the West Michigan Whitecaps, he had a 3.46 earned run average, and he had a 8-6 record. Now, he finished 0-3 in his last three starts and got beat around pretty good all three of those starts. But he was tremendous, and I think if you ask Vince Horsman, the pitching coach of the Lugnuts, who really helped turn things around as far as that pitching staff goes, I think it's Ben White, because all year long he preached fastball command, keep the ball down, and pace, work quickly. I would find it hard to believe that there might be a guy in all of baseball who works quicker, maybe Mark Burley, but Ben White works quicker than anyone else. He gets the ball, he throws the ball, but the first time through the order, he's throwing exclusively fastballs at 88 miles an hour, and he's going 9 up and 9 down through the fourth inning. Then the second, third time through the order, he brings out the changeup, brings out the curveball, which is a really good curveball, and he just gets guys out. I think it was just a marvel to watch him work. You almost go, how is he doing this? But he just throws strikes, gets ahead in the count, works quickly. It was just a joy to watch him work all year long.
The season's now done for 2013. Come 2014, wherever you might be, wherever I might be, who are the players, the former Lugnuts, or maybe players coming in from wherever, who, wherever you might be, you'll be watching to see their progress. You'll be interested to see how they perform next year.
Well, I think number one to me is a pretty easy one. Obviously, I'd like to see what happens with Roberto Osuna after the Tommy John surgery. He's going to come back hopefully at some point next year, work his way in very slowly. But he's just 18 years old. But that's a big question mark for him, the number two prospect in the Jays organization. At 18, he was dominating the Midwest League before he ran into some arm issues. I mean, the changeup for an 18-year-old is well beyond his years. You look at him, and then you look at Daniel Norris, the two big-time prospects. Norris had a tremendous season, by far his best season as a pro. The second half, he was absolutely lights out. He and Vince Horsman had a great relationship. The kid's 20 years old, a big left-hander, throws 94 to 96, and he can sit there, which is really nice. He's got a two-seamer at 88 to 90, changeup, curveball, slider, and he can throw all five pitches for strikes. He fields his position well, athletic, and a smart kid. He's a hard worker, and he'll be one of the guys that I'll look forward to watching next year, see where he ends up and how the Jays decide to develop him. And that's from the pitcher's perspective. From the offense, obviously Dwight Smith Jr., Dalton Pompey, who we talked about. But I think the most exciting player from the first half of the year was Gustavo Pierre. Now, obviously, it took him a long time to get things figured out at the Midwest League level. But when he did, he was unbelievable. 61 games, he hit .292. The power, the running ability, the arm. I mean, you can watch him do it all. Went up to Dunedin, up and down, struggled a little bit. I'd like to see where he ends up next year and see how things progress with him as well.
Let me toss two further names your way and see what you think of them. Those two names are Santiago Nesci and Carlos Ramirez.
Those are two really raw, really toolsy guys. Nesci, obviously, as a catcher, has a chance to work his way through the system quickly. He's got the opposite field power. He's got the tools. I mean, he can really play ball. I'd like to see him, I think, start again at the Midwest League level next year, see how he performs in the first month. If he's hitting a ton, move him on up. Really, Nesci, who came in at number 12, according to Baseball America, I think he's got the potential to be a pretty good ball player. And Carlos Ramirez, I think you and I both agree, maybe the toolsiest hitter that we've seen all year. You can argue Gustavo Pierre, but Ramirez has a cannon for an arm, a ton of pop. He led the Lansing Lugnuts with 27 doubles. He's got incredible power. I mean, you watch him during BP, he hits a mammoth blast, and for him it's just a matter of how can I start to do this in games. If he can learn to lay off that breaking ball low and away, I think he's got massive potential too, and I definitely agree. Those are two guys who, if things click for them, they could be impact players very quickly.
Pitching-wise, we know that Eric Sekula dominated the Midwest League level. With Tucker Donahue and Justin Jackson, they can both light up the radar gun. The question is the command and the inexperience that they both have to deal with, the command especially for Donahue and command for Jackson, but more inexperience for him. Each of them perhaps can be dominant down the road. Sekula already is dominant.
And for Donahue and Jackson, it's really kind of a similar combination. Hard fastball, 96, 97, they can pump it up there. The changeup and then the slider. And again, for those guys, like you said, it's all about command. Justin Jackson had a 2.36 ERA in 23 games. Gave up a few inherited runners, though, and Donahue had the opposite, a 6.09 earned run average in 41 games. Got some more experience, but again, the strikeout numbers were there. He's just got to be able to throw more strikes. I think they fall in love with the fastball too much and don't have as much confidence in the slider. We saw in the last game of the season, or 2 days before the last, sorry, Justin Jackson pitched for the Lugnuts. He loaded the bases with nobody out, and then he struck out the next three guys to get out of the inning without giving up a run. He went from throwing to pitching, and it was a pleasure to watch. Hard fastball, slider was wipeout, changeup, Hitters had no idea it was coming. The arm action was good. That was fun to see.